This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
The F-Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show. Bringing you another perspective since 2007. You are listening to The F-Word. The F-Word is a syndicated show produced on unceded Coast Salish territories, Vancouver, BC, Canada, at CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's cooperative radio station. For more information about The F-Word Media Collective, you can go to our website at feminisms.org. You can hear our shows through that site, plus coopradio.org, rabble.ca, archive.org, Pacifica Radio and iTunes, and every week we broadcast live from East Vancouver on unceded Coast Salish territories. My name's Carissa Raponin, and I'm your host and tech today. And on today's show, we'll be featuring collective member Pragya's interview with Rachel Kador, organizer with Insight, Women and Trans People of Color Against Violence, and Color of Violence 4, Insight's fourth conference, to address violence against women of color. But first, in honor of the last week of Black History Month, here's Vancouver's own Jillian Christmas with her poem, Black Feminist, performed with and recorded by Vancouver Poetry Slam.
In response to Patti Smith's Rock and Roll Nigger, in response to Solidarity is for White Women, and in response to my white activist, feminist, poet friend, who let slip from her mouth a humorous exclamation of, nigga, please. They said I could be a feminist too. After all, they are going to need someone at the meeting who knows how to tighten up all those white girl dreadlocks. Oh yes. They said I could be a feminist. That is, of course, as long as I don't ask any questions, try not to mention the troubling tongues of old icons, or how proudly mother deities suffered themselves black and dirty, blue and bruised, so they could use one of the really good words. Words made for the megaphone mouths of punk rock stars. Words like nigger. Like, everything that's yours is going to be mine for the using. Like, didn't you know what we were doing here? Like, go on, give them your story. You'll see how it shines like fresh blood for the cameras. There are going to be a lot of cameras. And they said I could help. Must be good for something. Must be some big-toothed benefactor that would just eat me up. Articulate black girls such as myself, just the right amount of mad. Shh, they didn't mean it like that. No need to get upset, we're all in this together. You know, they said I could be a feminist, as long as I don't talk about this black girl body, about that cold red body of water, about an inheritance so great that no one body could apologize it away. As long as I don't remind anyone where so many of the ideas for this movement came from anyway. No one likes to know it all. And yes, even in this progress, someone has got to play the fuel. All of us have to make ourselves useful. And surely no one has yet forgotten how sweetly or happily dark bodies take to making kindling. They said I could help. They said I could be the best kind of help.
You just heard Jillian Christmas performing her poem Black Feminist. On March 26th through March 29th, 2015, Chicago will be home to Insight's fourth Color of Violence conference entitled Beyond the State, Inciting Transformative Possibilities. The gathering will highlight emerging strategies and new frameworks that focused on ending violence without relying on policing, mass incarceration, restrictive legislation, and other systems of violence and control. Some confirmed speakers include Angela Davis, Nara Ilaya, Beth Ritchie, Cece McDonald, Lee Miracle, and many more. The F Word Collective member Pragya caught up with the organizer, Rachel Kador, to chat about Insight, the conference, its importance, the racialization of participation, and the power of organizing amongst women and trans queer people of color. Here is that interview.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the F Word, Rachel. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind starting by telling us a little bit about Insight and how it got started.
Okay, so Insight is a national network of radical feminists of color, and these are people that are sort of scattered throughout the United States, and sometimes somebody moves to Canada for 5 minutes. And it started in about 2000. Was the first Color Violence Conference. And that was organized largely by Andrea Smith, Andy Smith, I will refer to her. And sort of, there was such an overwhelming enthusiasm and feeling of power of women of color who are organizing to end violence against women, be it economic, interpersonal, sort of governmental violence, right? Like, there was such an overwhelming enthusiasm for those conversations and the space for women of color to organize with each other that Insight was sort of born. And Insight sort of came about because it was like, we're going to incite some change. I remember that first conference, and I was like, my mind was blown because, you know, like, you just don't see that many radical women of color in one place and being prioritized, right? So Insight was sort of born shortly after that, and it is an organized body, and it runs sort of on a collective structure, and so there is, like, a larger Insight National, but then there are smaller Insight chapters in New Orleans, Chicago, San Francisco, other places, and so the chapters themselves look different from each other depending on where they are. For example, New Orleans does a lot of work around reproductive justice and stuff like that, whereas in some people in the Bay do a lot of work on prison industrial complex. And so everybody, you know, like, everything is intersectional, yeah, but different chapters, both different.
Are there any Insight chapters in Canada? Do you know?
I don't know, but you can start one.
How does somebody start one?
I actually don't know how you start one formally, but I don't think that there is that much, formal process, right? Because, like, people want this to be led by the women of color who are organizing. So I think that there would be some communication with the national body and then also figuring out how the local body would be represented in the national conversation, because people do want to keep connections together. And on the last day of the Color of Violence 4 conference in Chicago, there is going to be a whole, like, track of events around sort of building Insight and then starting everything from starting a chapter to what the direction is going to be moving forward about the collective and ways we're talking about representation. So if you want to find out, you can do that at the conference.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah! The more Insight, the better.
What's your particular role in Insight?
I am part of Insight Chicago. I was one of those people that was so inspired by the first Color Violence. I immediately came back home and was like, I gotta be a part of this. So Color Violence 2 was in Chicago in 2002, I believe, and that is when I joined Insight, and I did a lot of work planning that, helping plan that conference, and, you know, I was in charge of the volunteers then, too, so I'm consistent. And now I'm a member still, and most of the work that we're doing right now is around planning this conference. So I help coordinate the volunteers, I do a little bit of media stuff, I do a little bit of program organizing, and I'm sort of like the person that will do anything for Insight, actually. Learn to drive a car, I will learn to drive a car. Maybe not that.
Can you tell us, I mean, I know we've been kind of talking a little bit about the Color of Violence 4 conference, but can you tell us a little bit about it for our listeners who may not have heard of it before?
Okay, well, the Color of Violence for conference is happening in Chicago at the end of March, March 26th. I don't even know the date. It's happening at the end of March, and the theme of this conference is beyond the state, right? Like, we've gotten to a point in our social world where the abuses of the state kind of have become very glaring, right? Everything from Marissa Alexander to Cece McDonald, we see the ways in which state institutions, especially that are supposed to help women of color who are experiencing violence, actually replicate that violence upon women of color. So this conference is, our 15th anniversary, so we're really excited about bringing people together, but we also want to create a space to strategize around figuring out justice and healing for people of color, women of color, trans folks of color, that are outside of the state. And so we're going to have lots of workshops exploring work that people are already doing, but also lots of workshops talking about the gaps and how we can fill those gaps. So it's an educational conference, but it's also an organizing conference. And it's also like a super fun conference. We're going to have cultural activities and, you know, really awesome child care. I heard there was going to be like a drum circle in the child care room. So we want it to be a place where people can come together and make connections and hopefully leave the conference feeling like, you know, not only is change possible, but change is probable and doable, and you're going to work with a person you met at this conference to change the world. Like, currently, there are over, 115 workshops. So much stuff, right? And, we're trying to create space where if there's not something that someone sees in the program that's helpful to them, that we're going to try to build in some open space for people to get together and just, make your own workshop right there, right? And so we, it's a packed schedule, but it's also, there's a lot of room for people to come together and decide an agenda for themselves for that moment, right? And we have amazing plenaries planned with, geniuses, everyone from Angela Davis to Miriam Kaba to Kathy Cohen and Cece McDonald. It's going to be inspirational. People are going to have all sort of feelings, and it's going to be great. And I'm super excited for it, too.
What excites you most about it?
I am really, I'm not going to get to go to any of the workshops, right, because I'll be working, but part of why I was really into organizing this conference is from the perspective of someone who's just working, you kind of get to see people make connections and, people start forming, relationships that are rooted in sort of activist work, but also sort of common identity or opposite identity or something like that. And sort of you get to see people grow into their politics and into their sort of humanity right in front of you. And you can be like, oh, I remember that moment where you met your new bestie and then you all started this awesome organization. And it's also so exciting to see just hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, we have room for 1,100 people, 1,100, people who are I support radical women of color, I support radical person of color feminism, right? How many times do you get to walk in a room and, know that everybody there is down with, radical social justice work, right? That doesn't happen. And so I'm really excited to just see, the masses of people doing awesome things, looking awesome, feeling awesome, and feeling, validated. So, beautiful. I know it's, a super emo answer, but it's just the truth.
That is really beautiful. I know I am very much looking forward to going. I've actually wanted to go since somewhere in the mid-2000s when I first heard about it. So when I knew that this was happening, it was very exciting. And hearing you talk makes me even more excited.
It's like D'Angelo. We're going to make you wait a really long time in between our joints, but it's going to be awesome.
In the Color of Violence anthology, Andrea Smith writes about that the first conference saw so many people that folks had to be turned away. And I know that you said that this one has room for 1,100 people. What are you anticipating in terms of participation here?
Well, currently, we actually checked registration yesterday, and we were at about 830.
Wow.
And so spots are going really fast. We don't have a lot of wiggle room, and so we have room for 1,100. Some people will come. Some people, will come in the last minute, and we'll try not to turn anyone away. But there is limited capacity in the hotel rooms and in the ballroom, right?
Yeah.
And so ideally, we get 1,000 people, over 1,000 people. Ideally, we won't turn anyone away. But we also are trying to think through ways, people who did get turned away, to give them some of the access to the materials. And that might be something like another anthology, or it could be sort of publishing the program online eventually, or something like that.
Mm.
We're still trying to figure out if we're going to record the plenaries or not. It's complicated, so we're still thinking about that. So we want to make it as accessible as possible for people, and as easy as possible for people to be able to come to the program and be part of the experience, because that's really important. But we also want to make sure that those who couldn't come still sort of get to enjoy it, virtually or vicariously.
I also wanted to ask you, I know you mentioned that this is the 15th anniversary of the first conference. What do you consider as some of the biggest differences in addressing violence against women and trans queer folks of color from 15 years ago and now?
When I read that question initially, the thing that occurred to me in a lot of ways is that, so much hasn't changed, and that's one of those sort of heartbreaking things, right? I actually recently unearthed my notes from that first conference, and I was that's what she was telling us about the Prison Nation 15 years ago. Why didn't anybody listen, right?
Yeah.
And in some ways, it was very different. It was very similar. The ways in which it's different, though, now is I believe that there. I'm really encouraged by the sort of, visibility and leadership of youth, right? Our movements were not sort of youth-led 15 years ago to the degree that they should be. We weren't talking about trans people, we were talking about them, but we weren't talking about them nearly as much as we should be, and sort of we weren't incorporating sort of, trans voices in leadership. We have some ways to go around, working around, talking about disability, sort of mental health, and stuff like that. But I think that our notion of who is under the Insight umbrella is a little bit wider, and then we're making sure that people are at the table as much as possible. So, I also feel Color of Violence 1 was, and maybe this is, a function of, I was in my mid-20s back then. It was, so rock-starry, right? I was oh, my God, Angela Davis, oh, my God, right? But, this conference is a lot more sort of, celebratory of the, grassroots work, right? And that people that are sort of doing on-the-ground grassroots work valued as, our rock stars. And
mm-hmm.
I don't think that's necessarily, different, but it's one of the things that I find, really exciting about this kind of version of the conference. The work is hard, I think, because the prison industrial complex, for example, has, ballooned in ways that I don't think any of us would have foresaw 15 years ago, and sort of issues with immigration and detention. We've had, people in Palestine are constantly being, persecuted. So I think that the problems have inflated in a way that we didn't necessarily anticipate, but I think that also the activism has.
This is the F Word. For more information, you can go to feminisms.org.
This week on The F Word, we're featuring the F Word Collective member, Pragya Esh's interview with Rachel Kador of Insight, Women and Trans People of Color Against Violence, the organizers of the Color of Violence 4 conference. This year's conference is in Chicago and is focusing on inciting transformative possibilities to address violence against women and trans folks of color without relying on the state. In part two of this interview, Pragya and Rachel discuss what's changed since the first Color of Violence conference 15 years ago and the power of organizing amongst women and trans folks of color.
You were talking earlier about how rare it is to have a conference in a space that's centered around women and trans queer folks of color and how that doesn't really happen. And when I was looking at your website, under the frequently asked questions, there's a question of, can white people come? And I thought the way you guys answered that was really interesting, because you don't say yes or no, but you emphasize who the conference is for, and you urge the people to consider how their participation or lack of participation can reflect race and gender intentions of the conference. So I was wondering what your reasoning was behind that response, as opposed to a clear-cut rule on participation.
Well, it's complicated, right?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, like, we don't want to say anyone's excluded, right?
Okay. Yeah.
We, you know, like, that's just sort of counterproductive, and that's replicating a lot of the things that exclude us. And also, like, we have so many really great white allies and cis men who are our allies, right? And so we... You know, like, we can't exclude people, but what we do want is to include the people who are our allies and down for us and understand their privilege and know when to step back. And then we need them there to be also, like, people who are going to intervene on, like, cis men or other white people. Like, we need people who are going to do that work with them, so that we can do the work with us, right? And I think that at this point, if this conference was overwhelmingly being attended by white people or cis men, we'd really reconsider how we talk about it. But it's actually, like, not turning out to be that big a deal, right? Like, we're not getting scores and scores, like hundreds and hundreds of people who identify as white or as cis men coming to the conference. What we are also seeing is a lot of our allies saying, like, I'm going to talk about why it's not the space for me to take up space, right? And so if we were more blanket or aggressive about cutting, like, white people or cis men out, I know if that sort of, like, that, like, organic solidarity that would have happened as like, widely as it's happening now, right? Mm. Like, white people come up to me all the time and ask me, like, can white people not go? And I, you know, like, and I feel weird talking about it because I don't want to say no, but, you know, I think that I remember Color of Violence, too. No one really asked that question that much, you know? Like, so I do think also there is a thing about sort of, like, white people, they are learning about which space is appropriate for them to take up, because this is, like, much chiller than, like, Color Violence 2 was around the issue of race and demographic.
Is it chiller? What do you think that difference is?
I really do think that white anti-racist people have done a lot of work with themselves.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that in 2002, the sort of... that sort of, like, white anti-racist language, you know, like, this was, like, the era of race traitor and all that sort of thing. Like, I think that the white anti-racist movement was still growing, and it didn't quite know how it overlapped with, like, radical people of color movement. And I think that it's taken a couple of years for people to learn, like, how to work in coalitions, but also to recognize that white privilege and white supremacy is still a thing, and, like, cis privilege and, you know, male privilege is still a thing, and, like, they have to be responsible to not replicate it. Whereas I think before people were still sort of like, you know, but I feel like I have the right to learn from, you know, your Kathy Cohen's and your Beth Ritchie's, and everybody has the right to learn, but you have, like, is it okay for you to take up this space at the expense of a person of color? And I think people are asking that question of themselves now.
I also wondered if it was kind of a, I don't know, when I was thinking about it, I noticed that it surprised me, and then I was wondering, why does this surprise me? I think part of it was because here on Coast Salish territories, there do seem to be more of like, yes or no, please don't come, or please do. And your response, I found it perhaps to leave more room for people whose identities may be a little bit ambiguous, like people who may be read as white, but are not. And same thing along the lines of gender, people who are genderqueer, whose gender is fluid, it seems to invite more categories that we may not consider at this moment.
Yeah, and this conference is massive, right? Like, we also, like, logistically couldn't take on the job of, like, policing people. Mm. And, like, you know, that's a very sort of, like, unromantic, unmovement answer, but it's just too many people. Like, I'm not going to count all the white people and then, like, go follow up with them. Are you white? Are you, like, a white student? Like, what's going on? I just don't have time for that because, you know, I got to finish the registration stuff.
Yeah. So, it's about centering the experiences of women of color. And,
yep.
Yeah.
And this woman of color doesn't
want to
chase white people around.
Fair enough. My other question is, what's it like for you as organizers to be in a position where you do get to work on this, where you do get to center the voices and experiences and knowledge of women of color within this context of white supremacy's ongoing violence against your communities? What's it like for you to be putting this together?
It is, like, so fun.
Yeah.
And everyone is going to hear that, and they're going to say, like, Rachel is so crappy at all the meetings. What is she like? it's amazing, right? Because we're all doing this volunteer, right? So everyone, like, goes to their day job or their night job, and then they come to the meetings, and we, like, hash out, like, everything from sort of the logistics of where the opening plenary is going to be, and, like, are the carpets in the hotel ADA compliant, to, like, what, you know, do we have enough transmasculine people, you know, represented in this organization, and what does that say about us, right? So we get, like, to really explore a huge range of things, but in a space that's not your job. You're not, like, in a class, right? And it's sort of about the practical things of the conference, but also sort of trusting that everyone ideologically is at least in the same book, if not on the same page, and then being able to have conversations with people that you trust and respect. And because you do so much sort of, like, minutia together, too, like, you learn each other's personality, so that those conversations are more interesting and deeper, you know? And so, and then you sort of just get so bonded, right? Like, this sort of endeavor, like, I made friends for life. Like, half of the people that we're organizing with this time are people that I organized this with in 2002. And, like, it wasn't like, oh, I see you every conference. It's like, we've maintained relationships. And so that is, like, one of the reasons why I really jumped at the chance to help, you know, do things with Insight, but especially do a color of violence conference, right? Like, I am always organizing a conference, but this feels really special because I feel like it's, you know, with real friends and colleagues and compatriots. It is fun, and then it's ridiculous, and then it gets a little, like, drama for a minute, but then everybody is cool at the end, and then there's comments. Let's do it.
So this conference, you're going to have people from, I'm guessing, all over Turtle Island coming, and maybe some people from overseas. I'm wondering, what do you hope participants can take from the conference to their home communities if they're not based in Chicago?
I hope, like, A, I do want to say that, like, I'm obviously biased, but I do want people to come here and go home also, like, learning some lessons about the way Chicago organizes, because Chicago is an amazing place. I am from Miami, Florida, originally, and there's currently a foot and a half of snow outside. I don't love the weather here.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm here because I think activists here do things really well, right? And there is, like, a spirit of organizing that I think Chicago has that's, like, super special. And so I want people to, like, come to the conference, come to Chicago, and then go back to their homes and be like, A, I love the weather here, and B, like, thank God I don't live in cold-ass Chicago. But also be, like, come away with some skills, some language, and some, like, inspiration, right? Like, I want people to be able to come home and be able to make connections between, you know, their job as a volunteer recruiter at a rape crisis center to, like, what's happening in the prison industrial complex, and, like, recognize the responsibility that each of those, like, sites of activism have around each other, right? Because that's part of what we want to do in this conference, is, like, help people build those bridges, but then also help them figure out strategies that not only work where they live, but also are, like, sustaining and nurturing, right? Like, we're spending a lot of time integrating healing justice, because, like, healing in and of itself should be part of all of our movements, and we don't do that. Like, we think healing justice is, like, go get a massage, right? And I want people to leave this conference, like, knowing that, you know, your work against death penalties has to do with, you know, healing too, and you have to incorporate that, right? Like, your work with, you know, the environment has to do with healing too. And so, like, I want people to come away with that particular connection as well. And I want people to come away feeling like there is, like, solidarity and trust, and that there is a critical mass of radical people organizing for justice and change, you know?
Okay. And finally, is there anything else you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about?
There's so much. Number one, please register. We want you to come, and we don't want to have to turn anyone away. Number two, Chicago is really exciting, excited to have you here. Please come. Please explore. We've got 3 packed days, but if you can, like, get out and see the city, because the city is amazing. And, you know, come knowing that this is a space that's going to affirm you. Right? And then know that you're going to be validated and respected. And so come and be proud of who you are, and, like, share yourself with this community, because that's why we're building this space.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Rachel, for taking the time to talk with us today. I'm very excited about Color of Violence, and I hope that we'll be able to get in touch with some of our listeners from Coast Salish territories who might be heading over to.
The F Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show, effing up the airwaves since 2007.